battering through evil-smelling liquid and bubbling marsh gases, they pelted onward, mud flying everywhere as lizard tails waved and scaly legs leaped high in the reptile stampede. Martin lost all count of time or distance until, like his three friends, he passed out from lack of air and was dragged along by the neck. Morning in the marshes was overcast with wraithing grey mist tinged with yellow sulphurous wisps. The four bodies that lay tied to stakes were practically unrecognisable as a mole, a hedgehog and two mice. They were completely covered in thick caking mud and clay from the wild run. Martin stared and coughed. His throat hurt abominably.
Martin, are you all right?
It was Palham. The hedgehog resembled a round ball of clay.
Palham, I'm alive at least. How are you?
Be much better when my old neck stops hurting. I've been awake for an hour or more, but I lay still. Didn't want to attract attention from those creepy lizards. They're all around us.
Martin strained his neck slightly. The vine was still looped around it, though now his paws were free. Lizards were everywhere, just sitting and staring at them. He noticed the large red-frilled leader had the short sword lying on the ground in front of him. Martin crawled across to Rose. Loosening the vine on her neck, he patted her muddied cheeks, calling her name.
Rose! Rose!
A jumble of lizards dived on him, pulling the noose tight as they dragged him away from Rose. Martin fought back as best as he could, shouting through the scaly bodies that enveloped him.
I was only trying to let air breathe, you scaly villains! Let me go! We weren't trying to escape!
The big red-frilled lizard stalked slowly across. He kicked the others off Martin and dragged the young mouse back to his stake. Hissing softly, he gave the vine a final sharp tug, indicating that Martin should stay in that spot. Flicking his serpentine tongue, he turned and slid gracefully back to his former position. Palham looked across at Martin and shrugged.
Don't say much, do they? We'd best sit tight and wait for Rose and Grum to come around.
Both Rose and her mole friend revived some short time later. They sat massaging sore necks, easing the tight vines off to enable easier breathing. The big red frill gave the vines a tug when he thought they had messed enough with them. He hissed softly and sat watching the four captives. After a while, they got to know the rules. They were allowed to talk, but only in quiet tones. If they talked loudly or pulled up the nooses, the lizards would yank hard, tightening the vines, and hiss soft warnings at them. Grum picked burrs and mud from his face.
Them slimy vermin's all right. Silent, though. Nary a word of them lizards be a-speaking.
Hush now, Grum. They're coming over here.
Silently, a group of lizards came to each of the prisoners and deposited by them four large gourds of water. The reptiles retreated and sat watching. Rose tilted one of the gourds and sipped. Then she drank deep gratefully.
It's water. Good, clean and fresh. I never knew it could taste so nice.
They drank their fill, dashed some in their faces to wash away the dirt and grime, then sat waiting. Next to come was a great wooden pan fashioned from a section of lime trunk. The red-frilled leader indicated that it be placed in the centre of the area between the four stakes where the captives could reach it. Again, the reptiles retired to watch. The vessel was filled with a warm, cream-coloured mixture. Palham ventured to dip into it with his paw. He licked at the stuff and shrugged.
Food. Tastes like some kind of porridge. Not much flavour in it, though. Yes, I think it tastes a bit like mushroom.
They all tried some and agreed it was palatable enough, but had hardly any taste. Grum shoveled a pawful into his mouth.
Tastes soup or nothing nice, but it ain't bad, Bruno.
Rose had taken several mouthfuls. She splashed a little water on her paws to cleanse them.
It's not very good either. I've had enough of that tasteless mush, thank you.
The red frill stalked sinuously over to her. He tugged the vine sharply, indicating that she should carry on eating. Rose sighed and looked across at Martin.
Oh, Frilly Neck won't be happy until we've eaten all our dinner up like good little creatures. I suppose I'd better try some more.
Martin licked his paw and dug in again.
Mushroom porridge? It's deadly boring.
Palham chuckled as he spoke through a mouthful.
Do you think they're trying to fatten us up a bit?
Suddenly, they stopped eating. The horror of what the hedgehog had just said dawned on them.
What was it Mr. Murdoch said? Cannibal lizards!
Twice that day, more bowls of porridge and gourds of water were brought to them. If they showed signs of refusing to eat, The big red frill would tug on the vines until they began choking. Grum groaned as he noticed several of the reptiles scraping ashes from a long pit at the edge of the lizard settlement. Others began laying charcoal and dry wood in it. Martin seethed silently. If only he could break away and reach his short sword. But it was impossible. They were watched by scores of gaping lizards, who seemed to have little else to do but sit and look at them. The young mouse lay back, his mind racing furiously against the insurmountable problem. A dipper appeared on a low branch nearby. The little bird nodded its head from side to side, ruffling its handsome browny red plumage and preening at its fawn-coloured breast. It made a twittering noise, and Rose looked at it strangely.
"Martin, that bird is talking to us."
Noting that the lizards were still watching, Martin kept his voice to a quiet conversational level.
"Can you understand it, Rose?"
"I think so. It said the same thing twice now. Gonna eat ya, gonna eat ya. I'm pretty sure it's saying, going to eat you, going to eat you, meaning the lizards are going to eat us."
"You're right, Rose."
Martin trembled with excitement, trying hard to keep his voice under control.
"The lizards must not be able to understand it, or they'd have chased it off by now. See if you can get it to carry a message to the warden of Marshwood Hill."
"Gonna help us, gonna help us."
Rose made a strange noise halfway between a whistle and a chatter. The little dipper nodded, pecking at the branch.
"I'll pet you, I'll pet you."
Palam had been listening.
"What did it say?"
"I tried to ask it for help. Gonna help us sounds a bit like going to help us. It replied, I'll pet you, which sounds like help you."
Grum came in on the conversation.
"Oh, but I'm you going to say a warden of Marshwood Hill?"
Rose pondered a moment.
"Right, how does this sound? Warden help us, warden help us."
The dipper puffed out his tiny chest and flew off trilling.
"Warden, warden."
Martin sat up slowly.
"Well, he's gone now. I take it that warden meant warden, Rose."
"It was the closest I could get. Warden help us, warden help us. Let's hope the dipper understood. Oh no, they're bringing more porridge."
Silent lizards replaced the empty bowl with a fresh one of the sickly warm mushroom porridge, and full water gourds were brought. Rose held her stomach and pulled her face.
"Yuck, I can't eat any more of this filthy rubbish."
The red frill came striding over. Martin could tell that he was going to tug Rose's neck vine tight. The young mouse's warrior spirit boiled over at the thought of the reptile tormenting Rose. As the red frill stalked past him, Martin let out a yell and smashed the water gourd over its head. In a flash they were grappling. Martin's neck vine strained tight as he pushed the red frill's head straight into the porridge, leaning his full weight to keep it there as he tried to drown the reptile.
"Here, frilly, try some of your own medicine."
Before Rose, Palmer, Grum could help, a mob of lizards were upon Martin, smothering him with their pulsing bodies as they freed their leader. Four of them untied Martin's neck vine from its stake. The red frill hissed balefully at him, tongue flickering in and out constantly. Helpless and weighted down by numbers, the young mouse was dragged off towards the fire pit. Two lizards put flint to tinder and leaped back as a curl of smoke arose. Other lizards flung themselves on Rose, Palam and Grum as the mouse maid screamed at the top of her voice.
"Leave him alone, you filthy crawlers! Put that fire out!"
Chapter 22.
Sometimes, in a pinch, frivolous young squirrel maids can turn out far more resourceful than they themselves would have known. So it was with Celandine. As a rambling rosehip player, she had acted the part of the brave and beautiful heroine many times. Now was her chance to give a star performance. Captain Sram and Clog advanced on her, leering and winking roguishly.
"Ha ha! Don't be afeard of me, pretty little bird. Soon you'll be singing just for me."
Celandine backed off, throwing up her paws in horror.
"Begone, you great ugly toad! Put not a paw near me!"
Clog, who had always imagined himself as a handsome buccaneering beast, halted indignantly.
"Ugly toad! You are nose little snip. Come here, I say."
"Never! I would rather die."
"Ho-ho, missy, that can be arranged. Now be still or you'll make it worse on yourself."
Clog leaped at her, clutching with his free paw. Celandine stumbled back, half-tripping. She grabbed the pawful of the sandy soil and flung it straight into the corsair's face. Regaining her balance, she dashed off. Clog dropped his cutlass and sat down hard, pouring at his eyes, which were jammed full of loose, gritty dust.
"Get after that bull baggage and catch her!"
he howled at his crew.
"Lively now! I'll have her ears for dinner and her liver and tripes tore out!"
Only Gruzzle stayed back to look after Clog. The rest set off at a run after Celandine, laughing and cheering. They knew a single squiddle maid could not get far with an entire crew of corsairs hard on her paws. Celandine ran as she had never run before, wishing that she had not added all the frills and furbelows to her rambling rose-hip tunic. They impeded her and often caused her to stumble. Behind her, she could hear the whoops and guffaws of her pursuers as they drew closer. The squiddle maid's breath came in ragged sobs. She was unused to running any great distance. Captain Clog had made it plain that he meant her harm, and there was no telling what might happen to her if she fell into the claws of sea rats and corsairs. Death would be inevitable. Not knowing where she was running to, Celandine forced her flagging limbs onward. Three sea rats, Gritter, Crableg, and Bloodnose, took the lead, outstripping the rest of Clog's crew easily. They were good runners, lean and fit. A sand dune rose up in front of Celandine, and there was no way round it. She panted fitfully, going down on all fours as she attempted to scrabble up the hill. Crableg put on an extra spurt and dived forward. He managed to catch the squiddle maid's back foot paw. Wriggling swiftly onto her back, Celandine kicked out. She caught him hard on the snout, causing Crableg to release her. The sea rat was so close, he could have reached out and touched her.
"You ain't going to be pretty no more, squirrel,"
he snarled as he wiped a stream of blood from his snout on the back of his paw. Whipping a curved dagger from his waist sash, he brandished it. Suddenly, a wooden lance seemed to grow out of his chest. Crableg looked down at it and fell dead with a foolish expression of surprise on his face. The slaying happened so quickly that Gritter and Bloodnose had not seen it. They arrived panting at the dune to find their messmate lying dead, with the short wooden lance protruding from him like a ship's mast. There was no other creature in sight except the squiddle maid, her eyes wide with horror. Gritter drew his sword and walked uphill towards her.
"You kill Crableg with that piece of wood, you little serpent!"
As he raised the sword, another javelin came whistling through the air and transfixed him through the throat. Bloodnose had drawn his sword, but his nerves failed him. With a small wail of fright, he flung the weapon away and took to his heels, back towards the main group, who were now in sight. Celandine sat shocked, looking at the two dead sea rats in front of her.
"Celandine, climb the hill! Get up here, quickly!"
a hoarse, urgent voice called from the hilltop. She sat staring at the carcasses of Crableg and Gritter, unable to comprehend what has happened.
"Move yourself, missy! Come on, up here, or you'll miss your cue!"
Automatically, Celandine picked herself up and scrambled dumbly to the hilltop. Roanoke's huge paws swept it over the hill and out of sight. The badger clamped a paw over the squirrel maid's mouth, and Balor and Feldo fixed fresh javelins onto their throwers. Crosstooth the fox had always liked Crableg's curved dagger. He took it from the sea rat's lifeless paw and tucked it into his belt as he nudged Gritter's body with his spear shaft.
"You mean to tell us that the pretty little squirrel did this?"
Bloodnose was shaking uncontrollably.
"Well, there was no beast out there about. She must have did it."
The ferret Boggs curled his lips scornfully.
"Did you see the squirrel kill him?"
Bloodnose sat down on the dune side, head in paws.
"No, never. One moment they was large as life. Next thing they're both dead. She must have done it. Can't you see she's vanished? Oh, I knew we should never have messed with magic beasts."
A weasel called Floater swapped his own chipped and rusted sword for the better blade that Gritter had once owned and scoffed aloud.
"Vanished me tile. We seen her go over this here dune. See, there's the beauty's poor tracks. I'm going up there and get her myself."
Clog stumped to join the rest, with Gruzzle at his side, still trying to clear the corners of his captain's eyes with a none-too-clean silk kerchief. Trammon shoved them away and patted Floater's back.
"Aye, there's the laddo. Up the hill you go, Floater. Sing out if you sees anything up there."
As they stood watching the weasel scale the dune, Clog muttered in his beard to himself.